Hi there, and welcome to the More Life podcast. I'm Dr. Sophie Edwards, a health psychologist and clinical lead at More Life. I specialise in disordered eating patterns and I'm really passionate about the link between mental and physical health. I believe that you can't have one without the other. Join me and my colleagues as we discuss a range of topics related to well-being. Today, once again, I'm joined by Dr. Nisha Patel. She's a health psychologist and clinical lead for our Greater Manchester contracts. She's got a special interest in diabetes management and has a lot of expertise in helping people to change their behaviour to lose weight and adopt a healthier lifestyle. Today, we're going to be talking about emotional eating, and that'll include discussing what emotions actually are. Also, what is emotional eating? Why do we do it and when does it become a problem? We'll be thinking about the difference between physical and emotional hunger and how an overly restrictive diet can actually fuel emotional eating. We'll then be talking about strategies for overcoming emotional eating and ways to look after your emotions in general. So sit back and enjoy the podcast. So hi Nisha, thank you for joining me again for our talk on emotions and emotional eating. To kick off with then, we talk about emotions a lot, but what are emotions?
Emotions are a part of our sort of human makeup, really. We all have and experience emotions, and you know, our emotions are often triggered by our thoughts, our feelings, our behavioral responses, and they can create a range of feelings. So you can actually have positive feelings, like things like pleasure, so you can have sort of positive emotions, but you can also have and experience negative emotions as well, like things like feeling unhappy, sad, angry, sort of the feelings of frustration. So yeah, emotions come in different degrees, but we do as humans do experience them as part of our sort of biological makeup as well.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important point, that, you know, emotions are part of the normal experience, both positive and negative. I think it's something that I'm quite passionate about, is that emotions or being emotional is often seen quite as a negative thing, and especially for females sometimes. I think when you say someone's being emotional, quite often we associate that with being irrational, which causes people to feel they can't express their emotions or show signs of their emotions, and it's seen as quite a female trait. So often men don't feel that, especially they can't express their emotions as well, which leads to all sorts of issues. So yeah, I for me, I think it's so important to realize that feeling emotions is a completely normal part, and it serves a purpose as well. Feeling emotions is a way our brain is sending us a signal that something's either good or wrong in our environment, just as our brain lets us know when we're cold and to put a jumper on. It will let us know when we're stressed and that we need to stop doing so many things at the same time. So they're functional and normal, is my point.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, great. And so whilst they are normal, sometimes they can definitely trip us up and lead, as you say, lead to behaviours that we might not necessarily wish to choose in. So thinking about emotional eating especially, so why are we doing a podcast on emotional eating? Why is this topic important for you?
I think it's important because from our weight management perspective, I thought from my experience or from where, you know, in terms of the work I've done prior to this, or just general knowledge around weight management, it just seems to be, you know, traditionally the focus has been on sort of food and exercise, but actually, you know, looking at food and actually looking at our relationship with we have with food and how food can often serve as more than just nutrition, you know, and how it can sort of soothe our emotions, I think is a really interesting but important part of you know, a client's sort of weight management journey. And looking into that in a sort of, I don't know, in a deeper way, may help, I think, people to understand their relationship with food and how that then relates to weight management as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I've come across so many people who say they emotionally over the years, and absolutely, I think when you look at traditional models that look at eating less and exercising more without digging a bit deeper, that really relies on, you know, what people refer to as willpower, you know.
Yes.
Which doesn't last forever, and as human beings we can only show a certain amount of restraint, and if we haven't addressed some of those other issues around eating, our behaviour is not going to change long term.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think it's finding a way to actually, you know, identify the behaviours as well. Because again, you know, looking at just someone's the food or people intake is or the calories, sometimes you will miss the sort of more sort of deeper behaviours and rationale for why people are eating those foods as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's you're putting a plaster on the wound with not finding out the cause. So yeah, really important. So what is emotional eating then? We've mentioned it a few times, but what does it look like? How does it manifest?
I think there isn't just one sort of, let's say, clear definition or a way of understanding it, because I think, like we were saying before, emotions can be positive and negative. So emotional eating, let's say from a person who doesn't have a great relationship with food, might often term it as comfort eating, or sometimes we hear clients say, oh, I binge eat, but actually sometimes what they're trying to say is that they're soothing themselves. So in a way, they're trying to get rid of this negative emotion, perhaps, and using the food as a source of comfort to soothe that emotion. But equally, you will get clients that say, oh, you know, we've had a celebration, or there's been like so many times I've been to the cafe this week and had coffee and cake, you know, so because I've met with friends and lots of social occasions. So It's defining what the client's saying about their emotional eating, so it can work both ways. But ultimately, like you were saying before, it's serving a purpose. It's doing something. It's either sort of soothing our emotions if we're feeling down, or it's kind of, you know, even heightening that emotion even more if we're sort of in that social environment.
I think that's a really important point, and one that I find a lot of people who say that they're emotional eaters think that there's something, you know, really wrong with their behaviour. And I know a lot of people want to change it, but I think it's really important to know that food does work. You're not doing anything hugely irrational. If you've got negative emotions, food does provide a distraction. It is comforting. Food is more than food. It's more than fuel. You know, certain foods remind us of family members, of our childhood. So food can be extremely soothing, extremely comforting. And emotional eating isn't abnormal. Everyone does it to a degree. I think issues only really arise, as you're describing, when we're using them to try and meet needs that food won't meet precisely. So those deeper emotions that really need resolving in another way, food won't cut it long term. So I think that's an important point. So, you know, why do we do it? Why do we emotionally eat?
I think over time, we, like, from that last point, that we all do it, in some way or another. And I think the reason why we do it is if, let's say, going back to that plaster analogy, it stops something, it stops that emotion for that period of time that that you're doing it. You kind of you make that association that the food is serving that purpose. It's providing that warmth inside you. But actually, what might happen over time is that it's you need a lot more food, because it's not actually treating that sort of cause, and it's only providing that temporary sort of, like you said, plaster over that emotion. So I think why we do it, like it becomes a habit. I think we learn that association. We then start to make the connection between actually this piece of food, for example, a chocolate bar, is actually making me feel good. So it's soothing us. It's providing that sort of a bit of that hug, that blanket that we want to feel that warmth. But also, I think it's important to acknowledge the sort of maybe the sort of the biochemical changes that food, what takes place in our brains when we do eat certain foods like chocolate. And I think we know from research that it does stimulate that pleasure zone in our brain in the same way that other activities do, things like exercise. It releases that those serotonin, that sort of the happy hormones in our brain. So then the brain starts to make that connection as well and likes it in a way. And I think that's how we kind of then start to do it even more. But the danger there is that ultimately, if we do it using food to soothe our emotions over time, that may lead to weight gain. So it's actually, in the long run, it's not really doing us any good.
Yeah, and it won't fix the cause of those negative emotions, like you say. So it leads to the issues that the eating causes, but also we're not, when we're using something like food, and I think it was important what you said, it soothes it and it's immediate as well. And I think that's really important. So some of, we'll talk about other strategies, but some strategies for soothing emotions take longer than others, but things like food and other ones like alcohol, cigarettes, they're immediate, and that's how we learn a lot quicker with things that give us an immediate positive effect. And I thought what you said about the learning, how we start to associate food with pleasure, and I think that starts really early on in childhood. I've seen it a lot. I've got a friend of mine, and I always remember that their son got a splinter in their foot one day, and it was such an innocent gesture. And while the child's father took the splinter out, the mum gave the child a lollipop and said, "Have this lollipop while daddy does that, and you won't even notice the pain." And it was such an innocent thing to say, but that message is what we're taught. We're given lollipops and sweets if we go to the doctor, and that message of food takes away pain just is something we do learn through childhood that gets reinforced into adulthood, and yeah, can lead to all the things you've talked about.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, I think it also, there's some research out there that even is looked at, how when we were babies, we were soothed with milk. So from such a young age, that association with soothing and food or drink has started from a really young age. But yeah, I think you're right, in terms of, we even see it, I guess, when we're out and about, how kids are often soothed with food. And that does then, in an adulthood, that becomes part of their kind of coping mechanism when it comes to negative emotions or painful feelings. And yeah, it and then I think it's in, I think this is where we go back to looking at weight and food and diet, because actually, it's important to look at the history of our, let's say, our clients, because often I think we can end up being so hard on ourselves around this, and we're not looking at how this has actually evolved. So, you know, and also I think because of that as well, we often lose that distinction between physical and emotional hunger. And like you were saying, we were so quick to act on our feelings that we don't actually realize that actually, am I emotionally hungry or am I actually physically hungry? And what is the reason for me actually putting this food in my mouth? And that is probably something that may also need to be explored when it comes to weight management, that we may have to look, you know, teach our clients this, you know, in terms of looking at physical and emotional hunger, and getting them to kind of learn that again in a way. And I know we're going to talk about this a bit later on about actually looking at pausing and things like that. But yeah, I think there are different reasons as to why we or people emotionally eat, because it kind of serves so many different purposes.
I think that's such an important point about physical and emotional hunger, and I think lots of people lose, like you said, lose that distinction, but also lose the ability to connect with their hunger and fullness signals as well. I think that's so common when people come into weight management services that they say, you know, I never feel hungry, or I never feel full, or both. They've just almost, yeah, completely lost contact with those physical feelings. And I think part of the process is definitely reconnecting with those through things like mindful eating and just learning to listen to your body again, because people are so used to either eating emotionally or, you know, maybe eating, binge eating in the evening, and then all day trying to just completely ignore their hunger signals, that over time we do lose that, but it comes back. You know, you often hear people say that they think their stomach shrunk, and, you know, I'm not a doctor, I don't know about the physiology of that, but I think a huge amount of that is that reconnection with the hunger and fullness signals, that you actually can hear your body for the first time in a while. So we've talked a little bit about emotional eating and the types of emotion that can bring it on, and, you know, we've said that it can be negative emotions, absolutely, but also positive emotions. But also, I think, what about sort of neutral things or lack of stimulation, things like boredom?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think boredom is one that probably may not often get thought of, that actually being bored is making me eat. And it's really important as well that's also factored in when we're looking at, you know, let's say a client's 24-hour clock, for example, or what their activity they're doing in the day, because actually if they haven't got enough activity and they're not doing enough to stimulate themselves, you know, again, there's evidence that shows that people may tend to sort of start grazing or turning to food to provide that stimulation, because again, it's going to cause the sparks in the brain, the food's going to provide that sort of biochemical reaction, which the brain will like. So yeah, I think it works in both ends. And I think you and I were talking about this the other day, in terms of the analogy there was looking at a thermometer. If you look at a thermometer from, like, say the bottom where it's blue to 100 degrees where it's red, emotional eating, you could argue that fits quite well on that, because on one end you've got the top end where your emotions could be really heightened and you just need that food to sort of bring it, that temperature down to neutral. But equally, if you're at the bottom and you're bored, you want to come up to the middle as well. So
yeah, that's a really good analogy, because we know that for so many other things, our body likes to be kept on the level. So if we think about things like temperature, like our body temperature, like I say, if we get too cold, our brain sends a signal to put on a jumper. If we get too hot, our brain makes us sweat. And exactly the same way as emotions, like you say, or stimulation. We like a certain amount of stimulation, and so that's a really interesting way of looking at how our brain's trying to tell us signals to keep us in that middle ground of the thermometer. So if we get too bored, eating can bring you back to the middle because it provides that stimulation, that pleasure. Or if you're up at the top with all too much going on, it can bring us down because it just provides distraction. And we often do it on autopilot as well. We talked a lot about this when we were discussing habits, and I think it's something important to mention that a lot of people who emotionally eat or binge eat say that, well, they do it on autopilot. They do it automatically. It's not a process they necessarily have to think about. And our brain likes that a lot because it can be done without thought. It gives it a rest a bit. So a lot of people say, and I think a lot of people have experienced this, when they're eating and they get to the end of whatever it is, and they don't physically really remember eating it, or they can't believe it's all gone because it's done so automatically. That again, that's another way that it distracts us from those emotions. It puts us onto that autopilot where we're not thinking about anything, as well.
Absolutely. And then I guess over time, if we're not conscious thinking about what we're eating and just eating it, then you can end up overeating it as well. So again, for someone on a weight management journey, I know one of the things we do is, mindful eating. So we have to kind of, it's another way to kind of get people to consciously think about and use all their senses to actually eat their foods as well. And in fact, that has been shown, that in itself can provide it still provide that stimulation, but ultimately, because you're engaging, you're feeling, you're recognizing the senses involved. And I guess a good thing about that is that you may eat less because you're taking your time of any thinking about what it is you're eating as well.
Absolutely, and it's mindful eating as well is about learning to enjoy your food as well, because if we're eating on autopilot, absolutely, we're not listening to our hunger and fullness signals, so we can very easily overeat, but also we're not enjoying it. We're not present in the moment, and we won't get that feeling of satisfaction after we eat as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, so I think mindful eating brings that back, and we can talk about ways of becoming more mindful as well. So yeah, I think that's a really important point about the autopilot. And I think another important point that to talk about is around guilt. So the role guilt plays in emotional eating, because a lot of people do say they, after a bout of emotional eating, whether they'd call it a binge or if it's even, more modest amounts of food, it can lead them to feel very guilty afterwards. I don't know if you've come across this.
Oh yeah, a lot. I think yeah, we clients. I hear that a lot. That I've done it. I've eaten such and such foods, and I just feel guilty afterwards. And again, I think it's often people can feel a bit out of control when they're eating, and it's that instant fix that they want. They're feeling that emotion. Those feelings are so strong that they just take over and that autopilot comes in. And I think when people stop and reflect on it, I think that's where the guilt does start to come in. But then it becomes a bit of a vicious cycle, because then the guilt can often then trigger them to eat more again, or the cycle just keeps going.
Absolutely, I think that cycle is really important. It's that the guilt that then triggers that more negative emotion, which can lead to them more eating. And it's a strange one as well, because emotionally eating is quite is socially acceptable in some ways. We see it all the time on television programs. So, you know, the classic one, if someone has a breakup, you bring them a tub of ice cream or a bottle of wine or something like that. And it is seen as quite socially acceptable. But then also the people we see emotionally eating in a socially acceptable way in the media are always slim. Whereas television programs that show large people with larger bodies emotionally eating, it's always sort of shown in a really negative kind of greedy type way. So there's a lot of that as well. So it's seen as socially acceptable for some and not for others. And people who are on weight management journeys can internalize that and feel a lot of guilt around it that is really unhelpful. When they're trying to resolve these things, because as I say, it's a normal part of life. And that guilt really doesn't help the process at all. So I think as well, you know, it's reminded me as well of the other part of it that I see. And some people who I've seen over the years who have come initially and said that they're emotional eaters. When we've actually explored their behaviour a bit further, it's turned out not to be the case, which is quite interesting. So, a lot of people who are sort of yo-yo dieters who do try one diet after another, who overly restrict, often find that that in itself leads to a type of emotional eating. So, if you're, say, going on a I don't know, a low carb diet, and you've cut out all carbs completely, where you're used to having them with most meals and snacks. That takes a lot of emotional and mental resource and concentration to be able to maintain that very low carbohydrate diet throughout the day. And so when it comes to maybe the evening time, your resources are drained. You haven't got any fuel left in the tank. And then if you have an argument with your partner, you've got nothing left to cope with that. It's too much to concentrate on, so the diet goes out the window. And because you're likely to be hungry and you've been deprived all day, you're quite likely to eat a lot. And often people will look at that, and the connection in their minds will be, I had an argument with my partner, I felt bad, and I ate, so I must be an emotional eater. Whereas, actually, a big part of the reason for that eating was the deprivation, the overly restricted aspect of the diet they were following. So, that's something I always look at with people who talk about their emotional eating. Because that plays a part in it, and I mean, you'll know yourself, being hungry can play havoc with your emotions as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think that's really, really important point about dieting and, actually being on that diet can lead to that sort of that eating pattern that you may have at the end of the day. And it's that I think it's around also, as humans, we don't like to be restrained for too long. And I guess at the moment we can all relate to this and the situation we're all in, with COVID and being at home, and the sort of emotions that we're feeling at the moment around being in this environment. And it's very similar, I think, for someone that in on a diet, because you're restrained in yourself from actually what it is you might actually want to have, and the emotions that may be triggered from that may result in eating certain foods that you actually try to avoid.
Yeah, and that's really interesting. I think you're absolutely right. There's because we all want autonomy. We all want to feel like we're in control of our own decisions. And we develop that in our sort of teenage years when we're quite rebellious because we're trying to find ourselves and want to be in control of our lives. And I think when we're put on a restrictive diet, even if we put ourselves on it, that bit of rebellion does come out in us and We don't like being told what to do. We don't like being restrained for a long period of time. So, and that rebellion can take the form of eating. So,
Absolutely. And I think that the whole concept of, I mean, the whole concept of diet itself, it can then the emotions that come from it, but actually what your thoughts can come of that as well, in terms of, oh, I failed, or I can't do this, what comes of it, and then what happens, going forwards in terms of the emotional eating is probably a different topic in itself. But those connections are so important, I think, because actually probably being on that diet and that restraint, and that guilt and all the other emotions that come with it, may actually then trigger even more emotional eating.
absolutely. And so many diets really cause us, they really encourage us to have some of that black and white thinking, that extreme thinking that you've got to follow the plan perfectly or not bother at all. So even a small deviation away can make people feel like they've failed and trigger those feelings of guilt, which again can lead to emotional eating. So I think that's a really good point, and I think that's probably one of our biggest tips would be to examine the way, if you're trying to lose weight and you are experiencing emotional eating that's holding you back, I definitely recommend think about the plan you're on, the method you've chosen to lose weight. Is it overly restrictive? Is it something that you could stick to for your entire life? Is it flexible? Does it allow you to do the things you want to do? Are this is something I see a lot as well. People are saying, oh, while I'm on the diet, I'm not going to go out for dinner with my friends because I can't eat anything on the menu. And that in itself is such a big restrictive thing, but it's also stopping you from doing something that would help your emotions, sort of seeing your friends, talking to other people. So examining that and making sure that whatever you are doing isn't overly restrictive is the first important step.
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely just sort of taking, just stepping back, I think, and just looking at, what it is you're eating, or how you're eating it, is a really important way of actually understanding why you're doing it as well.
So what other tips or strategies would you give? How can we change emotional eating?
I think the first thing is, I guess what we've just sort of covered is just looking at, just stopping. So I guess what I had in mind, and I know you and I discussed this as well, was around pause, just that word itself, and just, I guess, unpacking that a bit more. So just pausing and asking yourself, actually, am I emotionally hungry, or am I actually physically hungry? And that in itself can be, it's not easy actually. If you're not used to asking those questions, it can feel quite strange at first.
And what is the difference, just for people who might be wondering, how can we
So
tell?
let's say physical hunger, when we're physically hungry, it's things like the stomach growling, or you're feeling a bit lightheaded, or you're just starting to get a bit jittery. You can just feel in your stomach that you that feeling of I want to eat something. Now, I know we said you could actually lose that feeling, those sensations around distinguishing between physical and emotional hunger. And if that is the case, then I guess it's looking at your emotions, because if you're more in tuned with how you're feeling, then that might give an indication as to why you're reaching for that certain food. The other way to look at it is also, what was the last time I ate? If you can't feel that physical hunger, if you've had breakfast at 7 o'clock and then at 8 o'clock again, you're in the morning, this is, you're reaching for something else. Actually, that might be too soon. Because usually we're eating every 3 to 4 hours. So it's looking at the time gap as an indication, if not your physical the signs for physical hunger. And then again, the emotions, it's acknowledging them is another thing. So, you know, if we're saying P for pause and asking yourself emotional versus physical hunger, then A would be actually, well, actually, let me acknowledge the emotion and the discomfort. You know, what is it that I'm feeling here? Am I happy? Am I sad? What is that emotion? And it's, you know, and then you could be actually uncovering that emotion, and actually noting it and knowing what that is. Because unless you do that, then you're not going to be able to break this cycle, this habit that you're in a way. And I mean, usually tradition, you know, what when you are feeling that emotional that emotion and that need to eat, what is suggested is that you divert to an activity. So it's about letting that time pass, and that urge to actually reach for that food to pass. And I think this is where people, you know, find it really, really difficult, because you do start to feel that physical sort of pain and discomfort. But actually, there's an argument that without that pain and discomfort, how can we let change happen? You know, there's schools of thought out there that actually, for change to happen, we need to feel that discomfort. So yes, it's going to feel uncomfortable and painful, but actually, that's the step in the direction of actually overcoming this emotional eating habit as well. If it's something that's your goal in terms of, let's say, weight management, it's engaging in an activity, to still provide you with that feeling of positive emotion that comes from f after food. And then I guess E in the acronym of pause would be embrace. Even if you've managed to walk away from that food and not do anything else, and just walk out the door even, or walk out into your garden, and you've let that time pass, embrace it. You know, that is powerful. It's an achievement in itself that you've been able to detach yourself from that urge and that temptation.
Yeah, I think that's really useful. I think that's really good, because it's important to note that whilst emotions are normal and a normal part of life, we don't do our best thinking when we are caught up in an emotion. We tend to react, as we've said, either on autopilot or on but instinctually, rather than thinking things through. So putting a little bit of distance between yourself and the emotion is really important. And quite often I'll say to clients, if you get a really rude email from a colleague that makes you feel angry and upset and outraged, what is your first urge? And often they'll say to fire an email back. And I'll say, is that email, if you replied whilst you were feeling all those things, would it be your best work? Would it be clear? Would it be helpful? Would you get your points across well? And they said, no, absolutely not. It would probably be really unprofessional, really rude back, and not help the situation. And that's a really simple way of looking at it, I think. So, whereas if they got that email and took this time to pause, go away, do something either enjoyable, go for a walk, talk to someone on, you know, over the phone, and then came back and constructed the email, they're likely to have a much better outcome. So, and it's the same with things like emotional eating. So I really like that, and I like the uncover and understand part of the acronym as well, because I think it's important as well to note that whilst certain things that happen to us in the moment can trigger emotions, sometimes our reaction to a certain situation is disproportionate to it, because it's bringing up things from our past. So, you know, if you've experienced a lot of criticism over the course of your life, if you had, I don't know, a parent or family member who was overly critical, when you receive feedback at work, you might find yourself overreacting to that and having thoughts like, I'm useless, I'm a failure, that the feedback you're receiving shouldn't make you feel that way, but it might because it reminds you of past situations. So taking a step back and actually trying to understand your reaction to things is really important with deciding how you want to proceed.
Absolutely. And I think, if we even look at, let's say, relate that back to the way we breathe even, like I think when we're in that moment of heightened emotions, our breathing is so fast and rapid, and it sends such powerful signals to the brain. And actually pausing, breathing, even just taking a few deep breaths, actually physically doing something else, is going to calm the body down. And naturally it will calm the body down, and make you think a bit more rational. Because often, again, we cannot act on these emotions and do things that are sort of irrational. And you're on that autopilot again. So the way forward really is it is to pause. It's to do something differently, walk away, take a few deep breaths, and then revisit what the situation you're in. And I think one thing, I guess we probably haven't touched on in this, I guess this podcast, and in maybe another podcast that we do, is our environment. So much of what we are trying to do, and the way things are shaped is very much focused on the individual. But actually, I think you and I both know from talking to our clients and working with them that we're placed in an environment. I often call it the 1 pound world. You walk into the supermarket, and all these foods that are actually used to soothe ourselves are in our face. They're there. They're cheap. They're marketed in a way that actually are really attractive and an easy way to, just consume. And that in itself, I think, maybe needs to be explored and understood, more widely. I'm thinking here, in terms of the way things are governed and shaped. I think that's probably important to note as well. So the individual themselves often blame themselves a lot, don't they? And that's where all that guilt comes in as well, which we touched on earlier. But if we look at it more broadly, I think it's important that we look at our environment as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a really important point. Looking at how our environment might lead us to emotionally as well. Yeah, really good point. I think those are really good tips for how you deal with an emotion as it comes up and looking at some of the things that might lead to it. I think another point that I'd say that's really important in is looking after our emotions generally. We quite often with emotions look at how we can deal with them as they arise, sort of putting out the fire. But actually, as I say, emotions are an accumulation. They kind of add to each other throughout the day, the week. So if you've had lots of small things, those daily stresses happen, they can lead to equally strong emotions as the big things that happen. And actually, I hear a lot of people say they cope with the big things actually better than the small things. It's the small things that trip them up. So thinking about that and learning about how ways to look after yourself generally, even when you're not feeling bad, even when you're feeling okay, doing those self-care activities, whether it's exercise or relaxation or spending time with friends and family, spending times away from screens, spending times out of doors, gardening, all of those things that make us feel good and help us relax. Making space for those, whether we're feeling like we need them or not, is for me a really important tip.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think you're right. Just general self-care, is so important, and can actually help to teach us to, work with our emotions, you know, in a find more sort of maybe positive coping strategies as well, that still that provide that pleasure, you know, other than just food.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the other thing, especially if you're a yo-yo dieter, you can become obsessed, and it's food or losing weight or whatever it is can almost become your life, and you forget that you're a human being with lots of parts to you, and that, you know, losing weight isn't your sole life's purpose. There are so many other important parts to you, and there are other things that give you joy and pleasure out there. So I think that's such a powerful point. We touched on mindful eating, so I think it'd be good to follow that up a bit if people want to look into that. The next podcast is going to be on mindfulness, so I think my first tip would be to tune in to that, and we'll discuss it in a bit more detail. But there are lots of mindfulness resources out there that you can get into. So we hope you found that useful and interesting. Just to recap, emotions are a normal part of the human experience. Everyone experiences them, and they're nothing to be embarrassed about. They shouldn't be ignored. They're our brain's way of telling us something needs to change. And if you are really struggling with your emotions, please go and seek help from your GP. Emotional eating is actually a fairly normal occurrence, and most people do it to a certain extent. However, it can become a problem if it is our only way of soothing our feelings and we start neglecting other self-care activities. Overcoming emotional eating isn't easy, so do seek out some support. Find other ways of looking after yourself. Try things like mindful eating. Ensure that you're avoiding overly restrictive diets and make sure that you're eating regularly, as that can all help. Again, I want to stress that if you are really struggling with managing your emotions, there is help out there. Please do visit your GP. If you'd like more support from More Life, please visit our website. If you're in Suffolk, it's www.onelifesuffolk.co.uk. And if you're anywhere else in the country, it's www.more-life.co.uk. Look out for the next podcast and look after yourselves and each other. Thanks.